Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The San Francisco Mime Troupe is back. The legendary political theater company is performing a new performance all over Northern California, and as always, the performances are free. Now, if you've never seen the Mime Troupe, they are not actual mimes. They use the word mime in the ancient sense, to mimic. They talk, they sing, and they make a lot of noise. They're satirists seeking to make you laugh at the absurdities of contemporary life, and at the same time, see their causes. Since 1959, the Mime Troupe has been exploring some of the most important issues of our time, things like war, public education, the environment, and gentrification. This year's musical performance is called Walls, and it asks, how can a nation of mostly immigrants declare war on immigration? Joining us to talk about the latest show and art in these turbulent and surreal times are two guests. Michael Gene Sullivan is a longtime member of the Mime Troupe. He wrote the new musical Walls. Michael has written, acted, and directed for a long list of companies, including the American Conservatory Theater, San Francisco Shakespeare Festival, and the African American Shakespeare Company. And Michael joins me in studio. Hi, Michael. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for asking me.
Great to have you. We're also joined by Marilette Martinez. Marilette plays two characters in this year's show, including one of the leads. She first worked with the Mime Troupe back in 2003, and she's a company member at Impact Theater and an associate artist with the Cutting Ball Theater. Marilette has also performed with Cal Shakes and Berkeley Rep. And Marilette also joins us in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I saw the show yesterday, and I loved it, as always. Yay. You do such a great job. Before we dive in and talk about this year's show, I just want to ask you both, as artists, what has it been like under Donald Trump? How has these surreal times changed the way you look at your work and your mission?
Well, it's a few things. One, like, I was in a show when the election happened, and going into rehearsal the next day, everybody was just so numb. There was just this, we were doing a musical comedy at San Francisco Playhouse, and everyone was just so like, oh my God, what am I doing? No one was talking. There were no side conversations. There was this pall that had just fallen over life for so many people. And of course, as a Mime Troupe member, I start getting phone calls and emails. What are you going to do? What are you going to say about Trump? What are you going to do? How are you going to mock him? You've got to do something about him. And I was like, okay, first of all, it's not our job to do something about Trump. You know, it's not like we're going to, you know, because Trump is a this particular presidency, I should say, for those whose ears burst into flames when they hear that name, is really a symptom. You know, it's not about that particular president as much as people may disagree with his choices, as much as those who felt like he was an answer for them, those working class voters who so wanted to reject the capital elite that they feel was stepping on them and was stepping on them, that they went straight to the demagogue who said, don't worry, I'll fight against the elites, despite the fact that he's a member of them. You know, so it's about reaching out to those people, not cutting them off, you know, and not trying to say it would be so easy for the troupe to just have done a show where we were throwing pies at Donald Trump. And we were encouraged,
have been its own fun. But
yes, right. Imagine the song and the dance. But it's not we have to make sure to show that it's a much broader thing than that.
Yeah, I think I think every play and piece of art for the next few years should just be called Now More Than Ever, because that's the cry we keep hearing for, I feel like, everything. And I get the sentiment behind it. And I feel like as artists, like, we've lived in that space for so long. Like, we've recognized that call for a long time. And like, it's really exciting to have so many people who are now getting that and wanting to be more active in resistance in whatever form that takes for them. So I think getting to do a show like this at this time, under this particular administration, is big and important. And I think, in this one sense, sort of, just another step in the journey of what that is. And I think at times where we get to reflect this kind of political atmosphere, there's a big responsibility to it, and there's a big I think there's a big freedom and fun in it too. Like you get to sort of pick what it is you want to go after and what it is you want to say and look at something that's larger and pull the scope back as opposed to dialing in on like, I don't know, one particular something. It's like the more specific you get, the sort of more accessible it gets. So it's, I think, finding like what those moments are and how you want to put that in your art.
And there are so many options because a lot of people were wondering, what is the Mime Troupe going to do this year with Donald Trump in office? What was the process like behind the scenes in deciding what issue to focus on?
Well, in some ways, we start talking about what show we want to do like the summer before. Mm-hmm. And so I had presented to the company, we had two different things. One was we wanted to do something about healthcare, and we wanted to do something, and I said, well, I also want to do something about immigration. And so we were trying to figure out a way to blend those two because we knew they were both going to be an issue no matter what, whoever won. And so as we started pushing more towards immigration because of some other investigations we've done, we also wanted to keep that idea of not just looking at healthcare, but looking at border crossing as PTSD, the difficulties that some people have. That it's a incredibly traumatic experience that is not taken into consideration. People go, oh, well, the person's here now. And they can go back. And it's like, this is a horrible trauma for some people. Yeah. It is, you know? So wanting to have that, you know, with Marilette's character, but also knowing that so often, so much of the rhetoric during a presidential election is, oh, and we have to make sure to push all the right buttons for the electorate, whoever's running. Democrat, Republican, well, not the Green Party or the smaller parties, but the two big ones. So we're going to have to make sure to hit North Korea, make sure that everybody's afraid of this incredibly impoverished, tiny country halfway across the planet, that we all fear them as if they're going to invade our houses right now and break our toothbrushes. And we have to make sure to be deathly afraid of Islamic terrorists, who God knows those, you know, very small number of people are an incredible danger to us every moment of our lives, and immigrants. Both of the major parties are always going to hit those points. And so with immigration, we know that both the Democrats and the Republicans are going to use a fear of immigration rather than talking about the capitalists who actually took your job. Focus on the person who got the job, your fellow worker. Please hate them. Don't blame the boss. That's going to be an issue. So picking immigration that early and going, okay, now we do the research, read the articles. We have meetings to discuss what are different attitudes towards it. What are different stories, individual stories, generalizable stories. But in this show, I wanted to tell the story of three immigrants. And they're completely different experiences in terms of, you know, where they come from and how. There are so many immigrant stories. There's no the immigrant story. So we have the immigrant who's coming to the country undocumented from Mexico, and we have another immigrant who's come in and is a resident alien from Somalia, and then we have someone who came in legally from Ireland. And
is an ICE agent.
And is an ICE agent, yes. And then the character that comes in from Mexico, the woman who comes in from Mexico, has gotten into the country, undocumented, and she falls in love
with an ICE agent.
And so they're in a relationship. And the Somali is a storekeeper. He's just a member of the, he's just a small businessman. But he always has to deal with every time somebody announces on the news, oh, ISIS has just killed somebody, or there's just been a bombing or a shooting, that his neighbors and customers all look at him differently all of a sudden. His business dips for a little while, then it comes back. He's always on the edge of being called a traitor or a terrorist or something. And so that tension of when you are an immigrant to this country, a first-generation immigrant, that tension never goes away. Mm-hmm. At any moment, that thing that you came here for, that citizenship or that job or that friendship or that marriage, any of it can be stripped from you depending on the political climate of the moment.
And it is especially heated right now. Marilette, what was the creative process for you like? Because what's so interesting about the Mime Troupe is yesterday it was in Dolores Park, a beautiful day. You've got a huge crowd of people. But then you also have people playing football and dancing and doing other things.
Yeah.
And so you start each performance a half hour before with amazing music. I want to give a shout out to the
Mime Troupe.
Yeah, the rockin' musicians. They're so good. But you have to I'm guessing, really project because the crowd is really big and you're outside. And then you do a mixture of very serious commentary. You make people laugh. You have these different layers. Then you have music and you have songs. I mean, there's so much going on. So what is that creative process like behind the scenes?
It's a lot. It's like being thrown into like a pool of masterclass of how to just act and learn and be and also bring your like political self to the table and just like, I don't know, it was really like humbling and frustrating and wonderful, like, and it still is, like, where I'm like learning so much, and like at a certain point, like I hit, like I hold on, I think I'm full, and then it was like you don't have time, like just keep going. So yeah, like being in Dolores yesterday, which was like its own super cool, amazing thing to get to do. Like I had to have that moment within the first like 2 minutes of being like, yes, there's this many people here, and like. Just be on stage with your scene partner. Like, that's all you can do right now. Like, despite the fact that there's people hitting a bouncy ball and a trampoline and, you know, a paletero, like, hitting that bell. Like, so, yeah, it's a lot of stuff. But I think, for me, a lot of it was just, like, grabbing onto the things that I could do, which were, like, paying attention to what my body is doing, listening to my scene partner, listening to the band, like, just trying to key into those, like, just telling story. And, like, that's the fallback for me.
And what was it like for you to play an undocumented immigrant in this political climate? You're dating an ICE agent. You're trying to find work, right? Even sweeping at a corner store.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with all kinds of issues. And then it's interesting because we're there having our snacks and things. And one thing that caught me, my attention, where I stopped everything and just watched. I mean, that happened many times, but especially when you described what it was like to cross the border. And that's when the crowd really got quiet and really listened.
I think more than anything, it's like a huge honor. Like, and I'm a super chiona, so I cry at everything. I think being in Dolores Park, like, with knowing that, like, that community, like, I grew up in the Mission, and it's like that's the community I grew up in. That's the community that is my family. And getting to do that was so cool. Like, getting to talk to like a paletero afterwards, and he was like, yo, you were speaking Spanish in the show. I was, yes. And he was like, we talked about for a minute, and it was just super, like, touching to be like, yes, this is for you. Mm. So it's a big gift. And, yeah, I think getting to my friend's mom, who saw the show on Sunday, I told you about her, turns out, so my friend's mom is from Peru, and the first job she had when she moved to the U.S. was working in a corner store, which is what I learned the following day. So I was like, oh, man, like, this is, like, this got to be, like, it really, after the show, she was really, really emotional and couldn't really speak and, like, squeaked out, like, a thank you. And so, like, it's a really, it's a privilege. It's a privilege to get to tell that story for that community. Mm.
Marilet Martinez plays two characters in this year's Mime performance, including one of the leads, Zania. She worked with the Mime Troupe back in 2003. We're also joined today by Michael Gene Sullivan, a longtime member of the Mime Troupe, and he wrote the new musical Walls, and I hope you can see it. It shows all over Northern California, goes up to Ukiah and even Humboldt County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all of the shows are free. And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions for today's guests, if you're a Mime Troupe fan, if you saw the show over the weekend, what did you think? And also, we're doing so many shows this year, and I'm so glad, with artists, dancers, musicians, you name it, to talk about what it means to be an artist during these times. Yeah. So if you'd also like to talk about that, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet us at yourcallradio. One of the things that really struck me yesterday is when you played sound from Donald Trump saying what he says about immigrants, and we're not going to play the clip, but the whole crowd jeered and booed and hissed. It was really loud. But then when you played a clip from Barack Obama, Mm-hmm. Almost saying the same thing in a different tone and not calling Mexicans rapists, mm-hmm. the crowd said nothing.
Yeah.
That really struck me.
Right. And there's a quote also from Clinton, Bill Clinton.
Yep.
You know, I was hoping to get actually all the way back, you know, mm-hmm. through Clinton, but we just couldn't find enough quote.
And you had one from George W.
Right. Mm-hmm. We had one from George W. because we wanted to show that, again, like I was saying before, how this particular occupant of the White House is just a symptom of something, and how both parties have used immigrants. It's like the, you know, there's a line in there, which I can't repeat on the radio, I guess, mm-hmm. but talking about how each new group of immigrants is encouraged to give a hard time to the group after them to kind mm-hmm. of prove they're really Americans. That this is not just this president. Mm-hmm. This presidency is a result of all of the previous administrations who have used that prejudice and used that fear and used that you know, the bully pulpit to kind of rouse a certain segment, you know. And again, to make sure to say, well, don't blame your boss, don't blame capitalism, don't blame the market, it's not the investors, it's really that woman, it's that transgender person, it's that immigrant, it's, you know, it's that the black guy down the line. Whoever that is different from you in that circumstance, it's their fault, mm-hmm. not the system's fault.
Taylor was saying, Taylor Gonzalez, our sound designer, who found those quotes, I think was saying that he found just a ton of them that all use, from varying presidents, all use pretty much the exact same language, the exact same phrases. And he's like, yeah, it's all there. It's like they just recycled the same speech over and over. You know, and I guess that's where delivery comes into play in performance, right? Same words, different tone.
Right, yeah. Obama did more uh-ing. More pausing and eyeing.
Yes.
But, I mean, you look at the history. It's like how this goes back from the time that the fledgling United States swept over the rest of the continent, you know, mm-hmm. that from then on it was like foreigners, immigrants, foreigners, foreigners. People said, oh, we have to be afraid of them,
right.
Whether it was the yellow peril or the brown peril or the whatever peril, you know. That
American apparel.
Yeah, well, it's just fear. It's just a nation of fear.
Well, right. And I was even reading the Declaration of Independence yesterday, and in it, it calls Indians savages.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes back, obviously, to that time.
Yeah.
Right. It's always been, like I said, using the fear of the other
mm-hmm.
to kind of keep the citizenry on edge just enough so that they'll do what the leaders want them to. You know, you don't question your leader when you're in panic mode. Even if you're on Walking Dead, that, you know, especially. Doesn't matter if it's, you know, zombies, you still, it's like, oh, what does the boss say? And so after a while, you might realize that, wait, there are no zombies outside. The boss is just telling us to do all of this stuff, to feed them and massage their feet and give them all everything. We're actually not in danger. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, always a message of the Mime Troupe is it's the workers together, you know. We have tendency to focus on pointing to side to side and saying it's this person and this person as opposed to pointing up and saying it's them.
Tell us more about the Mime Troupe's mission. Maria, why did you decide to join the Mime Troupe?
Because Michael wrote me an email and asked me to do the show. And I said, yeah. Why did I decide to do the show? One, I love the Mime Troupe.
How would you describe it to someone who isn't familiar with it?
What a mime troupe is?
Yeah.
I don't know. You might have. I mean, you've been here for so
many
years.
Yeah, it's too late for me.
I would say the Mime Troupe is a political theater company that uses commedia and melodrama and cartoonisms to tell stories that are politically relevant and challenge its audiences and teach their audiences and engage their audiences to be politically active, not just passive spectators, but to actively get involved in what's going on, shining a light on what's happening politically and saying, are you willing to just sit there and do, or are you willing to get up and do something about it? I think that's what a mime troupe is.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of I did the workshop, the Mime Troupe workshop, many years ago, about 14 years ago, and like since then have been sort of stalking the Mime Troupe, I think. I've taught for their youth theater project. I understudied a couple years ago, and it's always been like a huge part of my like actor like these are the things that I want. I was like, I want to do a mom troop show. So I get to do my mom troop show. I was really super excited. And Michael asked if I, I think your first email was like, what are you doing this summer?
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever you want me to. So I like called work and was my like day job work and was like, hey, I have this opportunity that might be presenting itself. Can I take some time off? And thankfully, my dear friend who happens to be a supervisor of mine was like, we'll figure out a way to make it work. So we did. So that's how I got here.
And you can find more information about this year's Mime Troupe performance at yourcallradio.org. Next weekend, the Mime Troupe will be performing at the Live Oak Park in Berkeley, Saturday, July 8th at 2 o'clock. The music starts at 1:30. Be sure to get there for the music. And then Sunday, July 9th at 2 o'clock. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And then they move on to Ukiah, Oakland, Richmond, back in San Francisco, San Jose, back in San Francisco, Oakland, Petaluma, all over the Bay Area. Oh, and you go to Nevada City.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people in the crowd yesterday were saying, I wonder if they go to places outside of the bubble.
Oh,
and what's
yeah.
the reaction like?
Yeah, we'll play up in this year. Well, they'll be doing a reading actually at in Salinas at the prison there.
Oh.
Of the show, because we had worked with some people in Merced and migrant workers and people who are incarcerated population as part of the research for the show, actually. And we get outside of the Bay Area as often as we can.
Mm-hmm.
Like we'll go as like to Davis and Nevada City. And actually somebody approached me yesterday and was like, you guys should take this show down to the border. There's going to be some arts festivals down there. And we're like, mm-hmm. that would be great. It costs us about $30,000 a week to do the show.
Oh, wow.
People are always surprised. They think, hey, it's a free show. Yes, but everyone's paid to do the show.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pay for rehearsal. We have to pay for sets, costumes, everything. It's a professional theater company. So one of the reasons, like last year, we took our show Freedom Land, which is about police brutality. We took that to Maryland, drove all the way across the country to a little college in Maryland, did two performances, and drove all the way home because we got enough grant support and that college had enough money to bring us all the way out to do the two shows, which was great. Because we also got a bunch of interns from that
Yay,
college this year.
Interns. Shout out to the interns,
Woo.
Mime Troupe
because
interns.
They, you know, so we much prefer. We are really a touring theater company. The shows we do in the Bay Area in the summer are kind of the basis for what we want to do the rest of the time. But for the last 10 years, we just haven't been able to afford to get out of the Bay Area as much as we would like. And the colleges and universities and community centers around the country haven't had as much money. The country's been in a undeclared depression since 99. So it's been very difficult for them. But we do try to get out as often as we can. And I would really like – they were like, this November, can you guys come down and do a show just for
great.
A while?
Oh, yeah.
Like, and I,
there
and
was
I told
a woman
her,
from New York. She was like, do you guys ever go back east? I was like, if someone is willing to pay to help to get us there, yes. We will go.
Yeah.
The Texas border would be another amazing place.
Oh, yes.
Anywhere in the Southwest would be really interesting.
We were like,
place.
We want to do Tucson, Santa Fe, down in Texas, San Diego, to go all the way across that area would be great, but it would cost us, you know, and we just don't, we are as a, we don't take money from corporations, which is a big difference between us and a lot of theater companies.
That is a huge difference.
Yes.
Because so often you'll go to a theater and you'll say, oh, this wall is brought to you by Bank of America and this is Wells Fargo and this is, and we feel that taking money from corporations, you can end up in a situation where you're self-editing even if you don't mean to.
Yep.
And so I think a lot of theater companies, they struggle with that all the time. You know, what are their choices and stuff. And some do much better than others. And the Mime Troupe was like, no, we're not even going to put ourselves in that circumstance.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think we've all, maybe we don't like it, but we've become used to it, seeing these corporate logos on the brochures.
Mm-hmm.
Or I was in D.C. a couple months ago and at the new African American Museum, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Right when you walk in and you go to the greeting center, it's Walmart, or it's a welcome center. Walmart Welcome Center.
Oh, wow.
At the Native American Museum, there's a huge Bank of America logo, which is funding the Dakota Access Pipeline. So everyone, we're so used to this now because the corporate logos are everywhere.
Right.
Why is this so important to you, not to take corporate money?
Well, like you were saying, the corporatization can lead to self-censorship, basically. And it also just gives the wrong message. These companies are using you. They are using these entities to kind of whitewash literally and figuratively, their past. You know, you look at a company and say, oh, well, we're doing, like, you know, the African-American Museum. And then you look and you go, wait a minute, their money's all from, like, slavery. They are, in a certain way, in my opinion, the companies are trying to buy your soul. Now, you might take their money and not sell your soul. There might be a way for you to find a way around that. But frequently, a board of directors might say, well, wait, this is the money we need. And maybe we won't do that Brecht show. You notice how since we've gotten more and more corporatization in theater, you don't see Brecht shows as often. Mm-hmm. You don't see theater companies will just say, we're just not going to do that one. We're not going to do a critique of capitalism anymore. Oh, we'll talk about racism and we'll talk about sexism and we'll talk about this, but we're not going to talk about class. And there's, I'm wearing that, there's a board of directors going, don't pick that show. Don't blame capitalism. Or maybe I'll have to leave your board of directors. Maybe I won't give you that extra $25,000. And they don't even have to say it. They can just give you that look. And we as a nation, where our tax dollars go, I mean, now we have over 50% of our tax dollars go to the military, which technically makes us a military state. And we all kind of take that. We just go, oh, let's protest. We should do something about this. But you know, we don't push our elected employees hard enough to make sure that the money goes to things that actually benefit us. So corporations step in.
As an actress, how do you feel about this issue?
It's complicated. I can see how, like, a lot of theater companies are in that bind and do have that struggle. You know, how do we afford to keep our doors open and still produce the kind of work that we want to produce that isn't going to ruffle a board's feathers or may ruffle a board's feathers? I think getting to do this show in this way where we don't have that to worry about, or, you know, it's just really sort of put in your money where your mouth is, kind of a thing. You know, it's like, if this is our mission, or this is our the statement we're making to our audience, you know, the way in which we operate is reflective in that. And I think that's a huge amount of integrity to get to perform under, and would be ideal if more, you know, things could be that way. So, you know, hopefully that in and of itself offers its own inspiration or its own moment of, like, reflection for people.
Marilette Martinez plays two characters in this year's Mime Troupe show, including one of the leads. Michael Gene Sullivan is a longtime member of the Mime Troupe. He wrote the new musical Walls, and it'll be showing for free over the next couple of months, actually through September, all over Northern California. And you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation today on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone. You can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may go to our website, yourcallradio.org, if you'd like to participate in today's show by telephone. Call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And you can also tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about workplace sexual harassment. Uber CEO Travis Kalanick resigned after a former employee wrote a scathing article about harassment and a toxic culture. And then, of course, there's Bill O'Reilly, who was fired from Fox after so many harassment allegations. So we're going to talk about what it'll take to truly tackle this issue. That is tomorrow's Your Call. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.com. Today, we are talking about this year's San Francisco Mime Troupe performance. This year's performance is called Walls, and it's about immigration. And the main question the show asks is, how can a nation of mostly immigrants declare war on immigration? And if you've seen the show, we'd love to hear from you. What did you think? And also, at this time, what are your thoughts on how theater and the arts are really embracing politics? And So many groups are putting out biting political commentary and just doing such amazing work. So if anything stands out for you, or if you're an artist, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also tweet at Your Call Radio or drop us an email, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Michael Gene Sullivan, longtime member of the Mime Troupe. He wrote the new musical Walls. We're also joined by Marilette Martinez. She plays two characters in this year's show, including one of the leads. And again, I hope you can see the performance. You can find the schedule at yourcallradio.org. Up until September, over the next couple of months, they'll be performing all over the Bay Area, up to Humboldt, Merced, Santa Cruz. So spread the word to your friends. And as always, the performance is free. And let's hear from Brenda in San Francisco. Hi, Brenda. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I saw it yesterday.
Oh, great.
And I thought it was fantastic. You know, I have followed the Mime Troupe since the early 70s. And each year, it's always been different. And the team seems like they're just getting tighter and tighter and tighter as they go along. And, of course, the relevance of the subjects that they bring up are just brilliant. So I really appreciate them. And I encourage anyone to go, you know, track them down this summer.
Well, thank you, Brenda.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah. Michael, she says it's gotten tighter and tighter. How long have you been with the Mime Troupe?
He was born then.
Yeah, really. I've been with the Mime Troupe since my first show was in 88.
Oh, wow.
And then I came in as a replacement actor, like Marilette did. I came in as a replacement actor, and then about 4 years later, I started being a contributing playwright. And then a couple of years after that, I started directing for the troupe. And then in 2000, I became officially the resident playwright. And so I bounced back and forth between the three jobs. But and most of the shows, I write them.
And your partner is also...
Valina.
Valina.
Yes. Valina Brown.
She's amazing.
She is amazing.
I've seen her in so many of your performances, and it's so funny because after the show, there's a basket so people can donate. And when she walks around, everybody stands up and gives her a standing ovation. I think that happened for you, too. I saw you from a distance.
It was all my friends. It was my
no.
Your sea of fans.
How do you think the Mime Troupe has really evolved over the years? What are some experiences that really stand out for you?
Well, you know, when the troupe started, it was run by one person. There was an artistic director, a teacher, actually, Ron Davis, who started the company as a workshop for silent mime, actually, and commedia and melodrama. And then the troupe shifted into the San Francisco Mime Troupe when it became more political, you know, kind of dealing with deeper issues, but still doing it with commedia and melodrama. And then there was another shift in the company where they said, well, if we want to deal with contemporary issues, we need to stop working so much in analogies of middle plays from, you know, the Renaissance and start writing our own shows. So they started writing their own stuff. And then in the early 70s, the company became a collective, made the decision, well, you know, like some people say that the last vestige of the, not last vestige, but of absolute dictatorship is the artistic director. Of course, that was before the last election. Anyway, so the company decided to become a collective so that they could kind of practice what they preached. And so there have been different periods. At that point, everything that was created was credited to everyone. So the programs would say this show was produced, directed, performed, designed by the San Francisco Mime Troupe, and no one got individual credit. Hmm. And then over time, that stopped, and people started getting individual credit as the work became, I think, more personal in some ways. And so... after that, there's so much about each individual issue, as the caller said. Each year, trying to find the right issue and then finding what's the style. Mm. How do we want to tell that story? Is that story a melodrama? Is it a commedia? Is it more musical comedy? Is it an operetta, which we've done a few times? Mm-hmm. Each time to try to match the storytelling to the story so that it feels very unique. And who the characters are. In terms of, I mean, the commonality of Mime Troupe shows is to not make fun of the actual workers that are experiencing whatever the circumstance is. It's much more about how they twist and turn to try to adapt to an insane society. Hmm. How do you adapt to something that is really nuts in terms of how it's abusing people, how it's taking advantage of people, what it asks of you? And at one point, you go, no, Or do you totally go, yes, I have to do this? And how we want to affect the audience each year. Some years we want to really hit them hard with a more of a down ending and say, you've got to do something. And other times we go, they need a little hope.
Hmm.
So we have to give them a little bit more of a happy ending, but still a challenging ending. Okay. And another commonality through all the time is always to make sure to challenge the audience on some level. Give them something that's a little less comfortable.
Hmm. I think another thing, too, that just from sort of the outside observing the company for, you know, almost 15 years now, is what happens to you guys when, like, you get a resurgence of new collective members.
Mm-hmm.
And what that, you know, how having new blood in the room changes the conversation or focuses conversations in different ways and what's relevant to them. And I think one of the things that's really useful in the company is that you're dealing with a variety of ages in the room at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a 16-year-old intern who's in high school, you know, is working with, you know, with Michael, with me, with everybody. And just there's a room for a lot of different kinds of conversations. And I think as you know, we go forward, there's the opportunity within that is really exciting, and I think helps bring a lot of different perspectives into the room, and that helps inform the work.
Yeah, that is a big difference from, you know, when the company started and as it shifted along until the company's now old enough to be multi-generational collective members, multiracial, immigrants, people who were born here, having all of these different groups represented in the room by people who are very vocal and very passionate makes a huge difference. It's so easy for an artistic director, say, to say, well, what are we going to do this year? And everybody, they'll say a version of their opinion, but they don't want to get fired.
Hmm.
You know, whereas in the Mime Troupe, we'll go ahead and have those debates and arguments and people bring in articles and bring in evidence for why we should talk this and why should we do this and why should we say it this way and that way, to make sure that all the voices are heard. And it's my job as the writer to take all of that and say, well, this is the story that I think, this is a way I think we could put this story together. And then with each new collective member or somebody that comes in, to try to sculpt the show to make sure to take that perspective into consideration, but not make the show look like some big compromise of stuff. It still has to be a cohesive play.
That's pretty challenging.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Well, and Marila, the character that you played, Zania, thank mm-hmm. you, is undocumented. Michael was talking about doing some research for the show. Where did the inspiration for Zania come from?
I started reading a lot of articles, watching documentaries, just trying to, like, anything that, like, had immigrant in the title. I was like, let me just get my hands on it and watch it and try to absorb it and you know, imagine. Like, that's what we get to do as actors, is really just let our brains wander a bit. And then thinking about I grew up with my grandmother, and I listened to her story of coming to this country. She has an interesting story. She was technically a citizen, but then moved back to Mexico when she was really young and didn't know she was a citizen until she was a teenager, late teenager. And then the process of her coming back to the United States, or really for the first time, and just sort of hearing my entire life what that really amazing and inspiring and terrible, like, what that process was and what it was like for her to navigate that. So I think trying to just get all of that in and do it some sort of justice and just let it, like, just live in my head in different places and, like, finding what part of that was really juicy and inspiring and I felt and useful, I think, for Zania's story. I recently went to this event called I Stand With Immigrants, and I listened to, I think it was, there were 7 people doing readings of different immigrant stories from sort of the beginning of when the United States was founded through to present day, and just listening to, like, what the commonalities were in immigration that span time, and what that's like, and really just trying to visualize what that's been like. And, like, even in this little bit that I've gotten to personally, like, travel to other places and just sort of thinking about, like, okay, what would it be like if I completely relocated somebody somewhere and had to live my life in that way and, like, be brand new somewhere. And the, like, the like scariness of all that, even just in a regular way, regardless of documentation or not, that's already like frightening. Mm. And then on top of that, being in a status where you are living in fear because of a potential of getting caught for just walking out your front door. So that kind of microscope to be living under, and just the pressure cooker that could be, is something that is constantly on my mind. Like,
and what's so interesting about the immigration and the topic you chose right now, this issue is getting so much attention, and there's so many stories about it. I was just reading one a couple days ago about a man from Mexico. He's been here for something like 20 years. But never got a citizenship, mm-hmm. voted for Donald Trump, thinking Trump was going to go after, quote, the bad guys.
Yeah.
Well, this guy is about to be deported.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right? And so there's all these stories. People right. are really talking about it. And did you think, obviously you thought about that, like what can we add to this conversation? What can maybe we teach people about something different, give them a different perspective on it?
Yeah, like you said, there are so many stories. I've read that story, too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that that's not the only one.
No,
and then
it's
there's
not.
All the stuff that's happening with vets, former...
Yes, people... There's a whole section, cemeteries in Mexico for Mexican-Americans who never got their citizenship, but they fought for this country, mm-hmm. and then they were deported. You know, that what it means to be a citizen for, the first big chunk of the United States history, it just meant you lived here. That was really it. You lived here, you paid taxes, you're a citizen. And then when the country swept over somebody else's country and declared all the people there not Americans, then it started becoming an issue really because of voting. They were like, wait a minute, these people can vote. And California is a republic, and if we come in and all those people who were voting still have the right to vote, we'll still have, California won't be run by the same old Anglos that ran the East Coast. So how do you deny people a franchise? They're big parts of the country where it's just make sure to arrest them and take away the right to vote. You know, in the Confederacy, it's still an issue. And in the West, it's just say that they're not really, they're not documented, even though they've been here for generation upon generation upon generation. So that challenge for the nation to see, again, how do we define being a citizen of the United States?
Mm-hmm.
There are people who will... Proudly, there was a group recently who went to the Gettysburg, I think it was yesterday, they went to the Gettysburg battlefield and talked about how patriotic they were as Americans. They were flying flags of the Confederacy.
Oh, good God.
And they
lost!
Yeah, you lost. your side is either traitors, or a foreign country. You don't get to say your side killed American soldiers. You don't get to say you're patriots. But so what does it mean to be a patriot? If someone from Mexico was screaming about their patriotism but flying a Mexican flag, Fox News would be all over them. You're not really an American. Well, these people were flying a flag not of the United States, a flag that was celebrating, fighting for slavery and killing American mm-hmm. soldiers doing it. How is that more American?
Mm.
We have to figure out what does it mean to be patriotic.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of work to do. I don't know if you heard about NPR tweeting every line from the Declaration of Independence. And a lot of Trump supporters got really angry thinking NPR was calling for a revolution.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was back in the 70s, there was an organization. I think they might still do it. Where every once in a while, they would go out with the Constitution and they'd have it as a petition. And they would try to get people to sign it. And the people are like, oh, my God, you communists. What are you talking about? Freedom of the press?
Goodness.
All of this stuff. This is so wrong. And they go, it's the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine did a show one time where at the end of the show, he talked about flag burning. And he was like, this is considered wrong. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't burn the flag. And he said, but burning the Constitution is totally fine.
Wow.
That's Michael Gene Sullivan. He wrote the new musical Walls for the Mime Troupe this year, and I hope you can see it. They're going to be performing all over Northern California over the next couple of months. You can find the schedule at yourcallradio.org. It is always free. Michael just pointed out that it does cost $30,000 a week to put this on. It is a massive undertaking. I was actually watching when I left yesterday, everybody breaking down. I mean, it takes hours
yes.
to put it together and then to break it down.
Yeah, yep. The doing the show is actually the smallest part of the show, and
right.
in some ways it's
yeah.
a break
yes.
because we get there 9 o'clock in the morning and the show doesn't go until 2.
So a big shout out to the musicians and then all of the people who work behind the scenes to put yeah. this show together. And it's yeah. really an incredible performance.
Marilette? To shout out the Mime Troupe band one more time. All yeah. of those guys are playing like 4 instruments, sometimes 2 at a time. And then some of them are playing instruments they've never played before
wow.
or don't like specialize in. So those guys are working super hard for us.
Yeah. And the music always starts at 1:30 or a half hour before the show starts. So be sure to get there for the music, but even get there before then so you can get a good seat. We're also joined by Marilette Martinez. She plays 2 characters in this year's show, including one of the leads. And if you'd like to join us, we've got about 5 minutes left. 866-798-8255. If you'd like to talk about the importance of political theater, especially in these times. Let's go to Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes. Good morning. I just wanted to commend the Mime Troupe playwright Michael for inserting the voiceovers of various presidents, because I feel like historical context is really what's lacking here.
Yep.
And this kind of resist movement that says that immigration policy has suddenly switched under Trump is very disingenuous on the part of the Democrats, and I think it's and we really need more of that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Harry. We talked about this earlier. Again, if you tuned in a little late, when the Trump quote was played about immigration, everybody booed and hissed. And then when the Obama quote was played, which was very similar without the word rapists, it was mm-hmm. silence.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, people, it's like, you know, they have a certain amount of, well, this is our side versus their side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no. No, it's still used as a weapon, as a fundraising tool, as all of this stuff, you know, trying to define the nation by its enemies rather than by what holds us together. And both of the major parties do that.
Yeah, and Obama was called the deporter-in-chief, and a lot
yes.
of yeah. people weren't aware of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I put that the line in the show where, yeah. where one of the ICE agents comes in with this big stack of files of who they're going to be chasing, mm. and he gives it to Valena's character, and she says, oh, these are all new files, and he goes, no, these are old. And then she goes, oh, this administration, and he says, that's what you liberals think. These are all leftover from the last administration.
Yep, I remember that great yeah. line. The other line I really liked is, maybe he should build a wall around himself.
Yes.
That consistently has gotten some cheering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have a couple minutes left. Can you talk just about your role as an artist? I mean, those of us who are journalists, every day we ask ourselves, why are we doing this? What's most important? And what should we focus on?
Yeah,
so how do you go through that and answer? Do you ask yourself those questions?
I do. I think I try as best as I can to keep my, like the art that I make and even just the regular, work that I do in alignment with my politics or my ideals of how I want to shape my community. And I think as artists, being like, one, not being lazy and not like letting ourselves off the hook, right? It would be really easy for any theater company to be like, let's do crazy for you. And that's great. And some companies need to do crazy for you. And then they also need to do some work that, you know, they can really get behind very actively in a political sense. If art is going to always be looked at as something that has the potential for revolution, as, you know, it's certain, you know, like theater productions are being hit right now in New York about, you know, reflecting Donald Trump's presidency. If this is going to really be it, like if this is our main tool for resistance as artists, then yeah, I think we really need to lean into it, as the phrase is, and making it so that not only is my art doing that, but just where I work in schools with in lower economic areas in San Francisco, in Oakland, and those are the communities that I want to serve and have impacts in. So those are the places I go to like work. And just making it so that I'm surrounding myself with people who want to do the same thing. Whether we disagree or agree, like, is going to be its own conversation. I think just surrounding myself with the people that are in that same fight or in that same struggle and want to do something about it through an artistic means, or whatever the medium is for whomever it is, keeping ourselves accountable to that as artists and as community members.
You've performed this show, Walls, just 3 times, yesterday in San Francisco and then earlier in Berkeley. I'm sure you're going to have amazing stories to share over the next couple months, but did anyone come up to you to share a story?
There's been a few interactions I've really enjoyed. One was at Cedar Rose Park in Berkeley. That's over the weekend. And this man, immigrant from Africa, and he came up to me afterwards and was like, "Oh, you know, this is cool. Thank you for the show." And I was like, "Oh, well, thanks for being here." And he said, "Well, I just came to the playground to pick up my daughter, but I noticed that you guys were doing a show, so I stopped to watch. And then I realized the show was about immigration, and I stayed to watch." And I was like, "Oh, that's really cool. Like, was anything particularly, you know, resonant for you?" And he was like, he was just really struck by, like, it was just cool to see that story being told at all. And in a way that was very humanizing. And he was like, "Yeah, it made me think of a lot of, you know, what my first process was of when I first got here and like what that beginning period was like and how it made him really nervous and like just that particular period." And I forget for how long he said he'd been here. But yeah, I think getting to just hear people be excited by the fact that their story is being reflected.
This is what's amazing about free outdoor theater. I love it when people stumble upon the show without knowing, and then they get hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, doing the shows and having those people who, from wherever they're from, they just happen to be in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "Oh, my God, this is something? I didn't know this was a thing," you know? And they come and they check out, they go to the website and they check out the schedule and everything. "I'm going to bring people back to this."
How do you keep your energy up, Michael? You've been working with the mime troupe since 88.
Well, I don't drink coffee. but, you know, it's weird. I think that because there's so many issues, there are always things to talk about. There are always stories that are important, and it is up to us at the Mime Troupe to energetically tell those stories.
Well, thank you so much. The show is amazing, and I know that so many people, especially right now, are looking to artists to take a deep breath and to realize that, yes, we'll get through this. Michael Gene Sullivan is a longtime member of the Mime Troupe. He wrote the new musical Walls, and I hope you can see it. It plays through September all over Northern California, and it is free. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Marilette Martinez plays 2 characters in this year's show, including one of the leads. Marilette and Michael, thank you for coming in.
Thank you
for having us.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about workplace sexual harassment. Uber CEO Travis Kalanick resigned after a former employee wrote a scathing article about harassment and a toxic culture. And then Bill O'Reilly was fired from Fox after a series of harassment allegations. What will it take to truly tackle this issue? If you have a story to tell, you can tweet at Your Call Radio or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Your Call is produced here at KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Andrew Steltzer and Sana Saleem produced today's show. Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. You can email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.